Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm good. I always find out when I watch this episode that I remember how much I actually enjoy bowling and wish I should do it more.
Yeah, bowling's fun. We are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. You can join. You can support us by going to patreon.com/TheSimpsonsShow. For only $2 a month, gain access to all of our bonus content, including weekly episode reviews, monthly bonus episodes, and much, much more. Please go check it out. Really appreciate that. Also, by the time you hear this, I will have already streamed for 25 hours straight to raise money for the Children's Miracle Network of Hospitals for Extra Life Charity. Anyone who donates $25 or more has a chance to guest star on an episode of their choice in this very podcast. I'm going to leave it up for maybe a couple days after this one airs to give everyone a chance to donate if they haven't yet. So get to it. On to this week's episode. It is Team Homer, episode 3, F10, originally aired January 7th, 1996. We're in 1996, Matt.
Woo!
1990, we're 20 years. Now it's, well, not really, but still, like, kind of 20 years for a bit.
Eventually, true. Eventually we'll be like, all right, new episode came out. Time for a new episode.
Eventually, at some point. This episode written by Mike Scully, directed by Mark Kirkland. Finished 58th in the ratings. Nielsen rating of 9.4. Episode was the fourth highest rated show on Fox that week, following X-Files, Beverly Hills 90210, and Married with Children. So
you know, average.
Married with Children, haven't seen them in a while. They must have.
That's true, on the top ratings. I wonder if it was like a special episode.
I wonder. The chalkboard gags. I am not certified to remove asbestos.
Yeah, that's definitely
probably
true.
For the best. Very bad for you. You should probably kind of minimize contact with asbestos.
If at all possible.
You know what I say, Matt?
Mm.
More asbestos, more asbestos, more asbestos.
Well, when you die of lung cancer in 50 years,
I thought it was mesothelioma, the one they advertise on the TV.
Asbestos gives you lots of fun diseases.
Okay, good. The couch gag is the Simpsons on the couch is normal, but the camera zooms into a little mouse family, mouse surrogates who also sit on the couch. They're cute. They're mice.
It's adorable. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. Episode begins at the comic book store with Bart and Milhouse looking at Mad Magazine. That's how you know that this episode takes place in 1996.
Because there was still a magazine.
Well, I think Mad Magazine still publishes, I want to say.
Huh.
I just don't think it... I don't see any like teens talking about it on the Tumblr, so I suspect that it's not nearly as popular.
Teens talking about it on the Tumblr, okay.
Yeah, you know, those cool teens. It does hit a note of nostalgia for me because I was also a small child in the mid 90s, not understanding any of the jokes in Mad Magazine.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there are a whole lot of jokes that you could get, maybe besides like poop jokes in the Mad Magazines.
Well, it's very, I don't know. I think I was mostly interested because of the artwork, the illustrations. I think that was the main appeal to me. There was some movie parodies in it. I remember that. And I always did like the fold in back cover. Which we see in this one, that comic book guy makes the buy it after they fold it in.
You fold it, you bought it, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair. That is kind of half the gimmick of of that magazine was that folding cover. we get the Mad Magazine goes home to Homer, who him and Bart both really enjoy Mad Magazine, and at about the same level.
Yeah, there's not really much difference between their enjoyment. Although I think Homer is more apt to be like, oh, yeah, I get that, rather than actually, you know, going through with it and actually understanding what's going on.
I don't think Bart is understanding any of what's going on either. I think they comment about this Spyro Agnew guy. Who's that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure very few people know who the hell that is.
Yeah. Well, you know, that Mad Magazine. I think it says a lot about this episode that it has so much of like a good solid minute devoted to Mad Magazine jokes.
Yeah.
We get Homer going to, and they don't ever, Homer doesn't have any callbacks to the Mad Magazine gag in the beginning, does he? That's just the instigation for the B plot. So Homer's at Moe's and Moe's is closing. Because Homer's the only one there. I guess all the other guys are with their mistresses?
Indeed.
But they're not married. None of them are
Yeah, which
married.
no, maybe they're just like girlfriends. I think it's what we today would call a friend with benefits, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't
Or
know.
is that term also passé? I don't know
No,
anymore.
you're asking the wrong guy, Matt. That is, go
Those
ask those teens on Tumblr. They might be able to tell you the answer. But
people are too weird. I can't ask them anything.
no, you gotta expose yourself to some weirdness. You gotta let it in a little bit. Crack the door.
Well, yeah.
Peek through. Homer wants to know if there's anywhere else they can go.
Well, you're closing. It's getting late. My kids are probably wondering where their daddy is. There's gotta be some other place we can go. Think, Mo, think.
It's late and the kids miss their daddy. Let's not go home.
Yes. It's like, no, how dare you? There will absolutely be no going home.
So they go to the only, I guess, the only place open later at night in Springfield, and that's, I guess, not a seedy like strip club or something, and that is the bowling alley, where they can't bowl because it's league night, which I can empathize with that. Growing up in near Lake County, where bowling alleys were a place to go, but league night was always
Oh,
an
that's one of those
obstacle.
great places that actually served beer for the adults.
Yeah, it also serves beer, which I'm sure is what Homer is interested in as well. But league night, you always making sure you don't show up on league night because you want it to bowl. Bowling is fun. I'm gonna make my stand here. All right, this is a hill I'm gonna die on. Bowling is a fun thing to do.
It really is. I mean, it's one of those sports that once you play indoors, there is somewhat of a uniform. You have to be mildly physically fit, but not terribly so. I mean, the poor disabled people can't really do a whole lot, but any moderately healthy person can roll a bowl down a lane, and there's a technique involved, so you can be good at it without having to spend too much time at it, essentially.
Yeah, so they can't bowl. It's league night. We find out that the squeaky voice teen is Doris's son.
He looks a little different in this one, so maybe it's a different squeaky voice teen.
Maybe Mo objects to the treatment he's getting.
Man, you go through life, you try to be nice to people, you struggle to resist the urge to punch them in the face, and for what? For some pimply little puke to treat you like dirt unless you're on a team. Well, I'm better than dirt. Most kinds of dirt. I mean, not that fancy store-bought dirt. That stuff's loaded with nutrients. I can't compete with that stuff.
That's one of my
No
favorite.
one can, Mo. No one
That's
can.
one of my favorite Mo quotes. You can't compete with that fancy dirt. Apu shows up, also wanting to bowl and unable. And they decide that they're gonna start a team. Them and the long-haired freak over at
Poor Otto. He gets no respect.
Yeah, I mean that's true, but I'm not gonna necessarily object to Homer's description of him. But Otto's at the little, what do you, claw game? He's messing around with claw game at the bowling
I
alley.
always called them claw games, yeah.
Yeah, they need $500 for the, like, that's a lot. Do bowling teams really cost that much money?
I guess, but man, that seems like a lot. I would never pay that much just to
Especially
bowl in a league.
1996, $500. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money, especially back then. But they don't have the money. So Homer goes to his I guess his backup plan, which is to ask Marge for the money indirectly.
No, I will not pay you $500 for sex.
Oh, come on, Marge. You're getting something in return, and I'm getting a bowling team. It's win-win.
It's sick. And I don't have that kind of money to spend on sex.
That's my favorite part of that. It's not that Homer is asking her to do it. It's the fact that Marge is like, even if I like didn't object to it, we don't have that kind of money. Come on.
Right? It's like you'd think he would know how much money Marge has.
Yeah, that's we can't. I can't be spending $500 on sex. Come on, you gotta save it. We check in on the B plot momentarily here, is where. Bart, there's a bunch of included in that Mad magazine that he bought. There was a bunch of iron-on shirt patches, I guess you call them. I don't know. Like,
Essentially, yes.
I never. I ne this is a thing as a child that I never did. We never. I know a lot of kids. I saw the kids who did this who had shirts with, like, I know that they got the logos from like comic books or magazines and stuff, and then they had their parents iron them on. It's a thing that never happened when I was a kid. I don't know, but
No.
Bart, I imagine he did it himself because Marge wouldn't do that.
No, Bart seems like the kind of kid who would learn to iron just for spite, essentially.
Yeah, and he has a new shirt that he shows the class, to Miss Krabappel's dismay, that says "Down with homework" on it with a broken pencil.
Yeah.
And it, I guess the kind of the cultural ecosystem of Springfield Elementary is especially fragile because
anything that breaks the status quo.
All it takes is that one t-shirt and there is a riot in the school. Like, all the kids just go crazy. And this just happens to take place at the same time as one of Superintendent Chalmers' inspections.
Couldn't have come at a better time.
Well, Seymour, I must say for once I am impressed. In fact, I am going to give this school a perfect 10. I'll just write the 0 first. Now a vertical line to indicate the 1. Dinner? Why are there children walking on my head?
Well, Chalmers, that's an interesting question. Yeah, there's quite a story behind that.
Yes, yeah. Steamed hams commends us. We get Bart gets a talking from Principal Skinner without the shirt anymore. We get a Vietnam flashback, even though there is no flashback really. It's just we just get kind of a sort of cinematic dark shot at Skinner through the blinds of his office, kind of telling a story about Mad Magazine in Vietnam. Bart gets to wear a seat cushion home.
Wait, you didn't capture the Skinner clip?
No, man, I did not.
Oh, man, that's one of the best parts of this episode.
No. It doesn't even have... If it actually showed the flashback, I would agree with you.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of it is visual. It's a really nice visual. It's very well done.
I don't know. At this point, Skinner Vietnam stuff has kind of been done enough that I don't really need to see it anymore. Like, I feel like they've done a lot of different angles on it, and the final one is Principal and the Pauper. Like, that's, I think, like the final death blow to all of Skinner and his Vietnam stuff. So that's the last thing they could do, and they end up doing that. I don't know. I want to see the stuff that happens in Vietnam. I don't want to just see Skinner just sitting there talking to Bart.
Fair enough.
And you may notice, Matt, that when I want you to pull something really bad, I just tell you.
That's true, but you had already pulled your clips by the time I was watching the episode.
Well, maybe you should just, you know, be more of a go-getter.
Apparently I should just give up sleep entirely. You're right.
Yeah, that is what I'm suggesting. Just no sleep is good. So Bart has been punished, and Homer goes to the I guess the only other person he could think of to ask for money, and Marge did give him the suggestion, so maybe he's just following Marge's advice. He goes to Mr. Burns, who is getting, I guess, his fingernails done by Skinner? Not Skinner, Smithers? Is that what's... Like,
yeah, it seems like he's getting a sort of manicure from Smithers.
I mean Burns is so sensitive that he needs ether just to get through his manicure.
I mean have you ever filed your nails? It's awful.
No, I've never actually filed my nails. Surprise, surprise.
Neither have I.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. But Burns is in the middle of an ether trip, luckily for Homer.
Excuse me, Mr. Burns.
Poppin' Fresh, you glutinous little doughboy. Oh, there's something I've wanted to do to you for years.
Oh, wow. Mr. Burns, I was wondering if you'd like to sponsor my bowling team for $500.
Oh, why, certainly, Poppin' Fresh. I owe my robust physique to your tubes of triple-bleached goo.
Woohoo! Hey, everybody! If you want to ask Burns for a favor, now's the time! He's doped up or dying or something!
Excuse me, I'd like to request $17 for a push broom rebristling.
Why, it's that delightful TV leprechaun. I'm going to get your lucky charms.
Oh no, my brains.
Fantastic. I hope you don't mind that I added the details because I wasn't sure if you had pulled that.
No, I just left it in. Because when I mentioned that minute about Mad Magazine, like kind of amplifying this episode, I think this is the other, like these little moments here where Hans Moleman gets his brains drilled into by Burns in during an ether trip. This is what this episode kind of is. It is a real, like, in the, like, the central plots of it, A and B plot, are relatively kind of compact. But when you start looking around the edges of this, this is a weird, weird, weird episode.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's that joke, I feel like, almost could have been done in a punch-up phase. Like, hey, we need another joke to throw in here. Okay, how about when Homer goes out, he sends people in to see Burns, and it's all off-screen, so it's very cheap for animation. All you have to show is just this office, and you record a couple of the voice actors saying these horrible things and add a drill sound. Boom, easy joke.
Yeah, it's I don't know, and it gets... If you don't think about it, this episode is fairly generic. But once you start actually thinking about it, it gets even weirder, which I think I'll go into a little bit. But that is how go into a little bit later. But that is how Act One ends. We go to commercial.
And when we come back, Matt stops trying to think up trivia, and we get to see the Pin Pals as their first going as a team. They're going against the. I don't think we got a name for the TV people. Do they have like an actual name?
I think they're just the Channel 6 team. Like I think you can actually see the back of their shirts at a certain point, and it just has a big 6 on it. So I think it's just
here, Channel 6. Actually got a name.
Yeah, I don't think
because
so.
Yeah, it's Kent Brockman, it's Bumblebee Guy, it's Arnie Pie, and Krusty. That's right, because he makes fun of their uniforms. End quote.
I think they're just white T-shirts that say Pin Pals on the back.
Yes, in Sharpie.
Yeah, in Sharpie.
Yeah, it's the important part. Of course, the night doesn't start out going super well. The Channel 6 team actually does pretty well. Bumblebee taunts Mo, or taunts the team, saying something about senoritas. And of course, Mo, being the sensitive soul that he is, becomes quite paranoid that he was talking about him. But it's not what he said to anyone with even a rudimentary grasp of Spanish. Of course, they get down a little bit at one point. I believe Otto rolls and his first ball and gets a 7-10 split. And Mo is a bit upset about that, but Homer comes to the rescue.
Come on, guys. Let's be the team that supports each other. You can do it, Otto. You can do it, Otto. Help each other out. That'll be our motto.
You can do it, Otto.
You can do it, Otto.
Make this fair. I give you free gelato.
Then back to my place, where I will get your blotto.
Domo Eric Otto. Mr. Roboto.
You can do it, Otto. You can do it.
Guys, I made the spare. We won.
Yeah!
I love that they got so involved with the chant that they completely missed the fact that they won.
Yeah, a 7-10 split is incredibly difficult to pull off. So,
it's ridiculously hard.
So, Otto pulling that is pretty impressive. I do like the fact that their hallmark is that they're positive. Like that's I do like that. That's good.
Well, it's one of those things that it's very odd because you have a team full of men, and most of the time with men and things like that, I feel like it's one of the. It's just. Men aren't generally supportive of each other. They're very down on each other, but in a loving way. But this time it's different in a weird way. And it's really interesting to see, essentially. But after they win the match, they go home. Homer is flush with his victory and regales Marge with a tale of him coming up with the chant that won the match. Of course, Marge immediately asks, so who actually bowled? And Homer's, oh, I don't know, his name, I don't know his name was, Otto something, Otto Man, Homer, as we eventually found out.
Well, I mean, Otto lived with them for a time, so you think that maybe, I mean, I guess that makes sense that Homer wouldn't remember his name. Marge is almost in this scene kind of acting like Homer a little bit.
Yeah, because she completely ignores him. She's like, oh, man, that's really amazing. Of course, Homer is trying to brag about something there's really no reason for him to brag about. So,
I mean, he can brag about his team's victory. He had a part in it. He was 1/4 the team. He had to bowl, you know, his score.
That's true, but he's trying to take a credit as the chant won the match, not Otto's bowling.
Well, I kind of want to launch into like a spiel about how many too many people kind of put too much emphasis on single plays in any kind of organized team sport, but I'll just let that go.
We'll forgive Homer this one
yeah,
time.
Yeah, we'll let Homer. It's Homer. Yeah, it makes. And I think it's fair to say that the chant had maybe some effect. It didn't. Certainly wasn't negative.
That's true. It's Otto. He might have been hopped up on all kinds of drugs, and that sent him into a athletic spiral upwards or something along those lines. That's how that works, right?
Sure. Yeah. Definitely.
Anyway. The next morning, we see the kids at school. They are basically learning about their new opportunities with uniforms, thanks to Bart, who gets whaled on by a whole bunch of paper balls and a shoe, which is, hey, if you're pissed at somebody, throw them a shoe. It's tradition. But immediately after this announcement, Skinner has a little fashion show, and it's something.
Say hello to our little genius, Martin, who looks even smarter in this vest and short pad combination from Mr. Boy of Main Street. Or how about little Lisa Simpson? She'll have no reason to play the blues in this snappy ensemble, topped off with a saucy French beret that seems to scream, silence!
All right, pick your size, extra small or extra large. We've got both. No pushing now. What? Oh, I've just been informed we've run out of extra large.
Which, if they're adult sizes, that's not a big deal for a bunch of elementary school students. But if they're kid sizes, yikes.
I think they're kid sizes. I love everything about this scene. The Spanish flea music and just and it's like tinny, like old vinyl Spanish flea. How Martin?
It looks like a what were the original record players called? They had a special name.
I don't remember.
Whatever, I will think of it. Sorry, okay.
I was going to say Martin. The two models are Martin for boys and Lisa for the girls. And Martin is like actually like he is going on like he is like really doing. He's a good model. Like he should.
He's going on with his bad self.
Yeah, exactly. He's like flaunting it. Lisa, on the other hand, is carrying what looks to be like a toy saxophone.
Yeah, it's very light. She's holding it with one hand, kind of at a weird...
It's like pink.
Just in the summer body.
Weird color. But she is much more kind of reserved, and I think she also gets pelted because of... Just, I think, because she's a Simpson. They've already pelted Bart, so they take the rest out on her. I also want to note that on the boxes that the uniforms come in, they just have forklifts, like just drive into the auditorium with big boxes that have the names, the brand name for the uniforms, and they are for the boys, Mr. Boy, and for the girls, Mr. Boy for girls.
The best name for a uniform line ever,
Mr. Boy for girls. Yeah, I it's really great, and I also wanted to mention Doris Grau for Lunch Lady Doris and her performance and her little spiel during this bit. This episode is actually, she passed shortly before this episode aired. She was in her 80s at the time, and this episode is actually dedicated to her. So she actually, her last episode isn't for, I believe, until 1987, just because they recorded her so far in advance. But I did want to mention that she did she had more to do in this episode than she does in a lot of the other appearances from Lunch Lady Doris.
That's true. It's usually just one or two lines, perhaps, about bunly goodness.
Mm-hmm.
But her extended lines in this are amazing. It's really sad that she couldn't be in more. I mean, after Phil Hartman, I think I will miss her the most.
What about Marshall Wallace?
Oh, that's right. Robbie, why do you have to keep making me sad or reminding me of people who are dead? No one ever dies, Robbie.
Do you want me to get started on 2016? There's a long list.
Yeah, I know. It's been a rough awful year.
It's been a rough year. Oh, what happens next to the bowling alley, Matt?
I'm too sad.
Let's move on from the sadness. What happens to the bowling alley?
So back to the pin pals. They beat the DMV, which includes Patty and Selma and some other people we don't know. And they also beat the police, the actual police, not the band. You know, I was hoping. Sting, who was it that was in the police? That Sting.
Sting. Yeah. There's. I mean, Stuart Copeland was on drums. I don't remember who played. Who's the third?
Anything
there
else?
There was a trio. I forget. Sting is definitely everyone remembers. Then Copeland is by far the number two, and then. I'm sorry for whoever number three
the other guy.
I'm sure musician, people, police fans probably screaming at their, they know, but I don't remember his name. I mean, theoretically, they'd have to have a fourth, so I don't know who they'd pop in. I think if there was, the police was a bowling team in Springfield, they'd probably have to bring in the wrestler Sting, so they'd have two.
Now, Stings. That would be an interesting one. I mean, Snake is kind of like that, so it works out.
That's true.
It's a perfect analogy.
Yeah, he works both ways. Yeah, exactly. Snake. It's just Snake used to be a wrestler.
Obviously, but I mean, his name is Snake. Look at that hair, the tattoos. He's obviously an ex-wrestler.
He had the same gimmick as Jake the Snake, and Jake chased him out of the WWF.
That's exactly what happened. Now we know, and now you know the rest of the story.
We don't want to get started on my WWF headcanon. That's bad. We should continue.
That's for your other podcasts, right?
Exactly.
That'll be the next episode of The Fanatic as Robbie reads his old WWF fan fictions.
Actually, now that you mention it.
Back to the pin pals. Mm-hmm. They beat the police because the Springfield law enforcement team is essentially Chief Wiggum, Eddie, and Lou. And so they need a fourth, so they spring Snake from jail. And when they unlock him from his leg shackles, he immediately runs out the door. So they have to forfeit, which is a great gag. But even after they win against the police, they know that they're up against the Holy Rollers. Well, will be eventually at the end of the team because, you know, they're obviously really good at this. But the Holy Rollers are the champions. They've
won five times.
They always win five times in a row, and they've never been caught driving without pants. Never. I mean, that's just... Obviously, they're the holier-than-thou people, but come on, everyone's been caught driving without pants.
I've never been caught.
Oh, okay, that's true. You just did nice legal things while you were driving without pants?
Maybe went to the drive-thru one time because I was hungry and I didn't want to get real dressed.
Fair enough. I mean, it happens.
It was close.
I mean, you're a guy. You're probably wearing boxers. That's close enough to pants.
No one said anything. I'm fine.
But of course, Homer attempts to make fun of the Holy Rollers by making fun of Ned when he does not get it's 9 out of 10 of the pins. Of course, Ned prays to God, immediately says, "Hey, it's me, Ned." The pin falls over, and Homer is shocked by the ball return.
Which, again, another that's another. It's a weird episode. There's weird stuff in this.
There is. It's just
Burns drills in a Hans moment. God shows up to affect a bowling result. Like, it's.
There's a Tanya Harding joke later.
It's very strange.
It's one of those episodes that's just funny. Nothing of real consequence seems to happen, but it's just funny.
Yeah, it is. There is a lot of good laughs in it.
Yeah. And it's one of those episodes you remember fondly when you think of the jokes later and just chuckle to yourself. The Simpsons have a lot of those, but this episode seems to be particularly noteworthy for them. Next, we see the following morning where Homer is discussing his victory. The kids are not happy about their uniforms.
Mom, my slingshot doesn't fit in these pockets. And these shorts leave nothing to the imagination. These uniforms suck.
Bart, why do you pick up words like that?
Yeah, Mo, that team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Homer, watch your mouth.
I gotta go. My damn wiener kids are listening.
First of all, A plus to Homer for quality use of the word sucks.
He got a lot of mileage.
He's a wordsmith.
Got a lot of mileage.
That's true. He didn't quite get to Buffalo levels, but he's he got pretty high up there. Of course, the kids are extremely anguished at their uniforms, but Homer says, "Oh, you should kick back against the world and beat everybody, just like him and his team, the future league champions of the world, because that's how bowling leagues work, apparently."
That is how it works.
But immediately after Homer says this, we cut straight to Mr. Burns, who's going through his canceled checks, which is something only an old person probably does, even back in 1996. Anyway, we see Mr. Burns going through his checks, and he is very confused that he wrote a check for bowling. Why would he write a check for bowling? Luckily, then Smithers comes over to correct him. "Oh, sir, that was for your bowling," which I have no idea what a bowling is. Do you?
I don't think it's a real thing, Matt.
Okay, good, because that sounds awful. I mean, sounds like they remove your intestines, clean them out, put them back in.
What it brings to mind for me nowadays in 2016 is like people who get coffee shot up inside them.
Oh yes, the coffee enemas.
Yeah, that stuff. You know, to clear them out. That's what it makes me think of. I don't know if that's what they intended. Who knows? Mr. Burns is a medical anomaly, which they establish later on in the show. But
that is true.
They establish multiple times later on in the show. But they also talk about that for a good 30 seconds about bowling.
That's true, and how important it is. Mm-hmm. Remember the month they didn't have it done?
One time.
Of course, Mr. Burns laughs at his own mistake and then says, ha ha, of course. And then goes to the next check, which is for bowling. And, of course, Mr. Burns wrote in the memo, because you always write memos on your checks, so you know what they were for, to my pal Poppin' Fresh.
Especially when you're under the effects of ether. You always make sure to write in the memo to Poppin' Fresh.
It's always important to have your ether reg around.
It makes
everything more fun.
I especially like the fact that the nuclear plant computer has has Poppin' Fresh just programmed in as a comparison point to all employees.
I mean, they didn't dial up to the old AOL and download a picture of them. We didn't see a jump in time of like hours.
No, I don't think so. And it also is able to calculate the probability of miscalculation.
Well, I'm assuming Mr. Burns actually has a supercomputer in his office at this point.
I will have to accept that as the answer, because there is none other.
Yeah, not in 1996. Nowadays, you can do that on your phone. Not so much in 96. There are two possible choices for a match for the Poppin' Fresh physique. There is Pops Freshermeyer, which I have to imagine is just because of the name.
I think so, yes.
And then there is Homer, who is a guaranteed 99.999% something, 1 in 44 billion chance of error for Poppin' Fresh. Which is interesting, because when Mr. Burns was hallucinating that Homer was Poppin' Fresh, he was poking Poppin' Fresh in the belly, but Homer in the eye. So I have to imagine Poppin' Fresh is actually a little larger. Maybe they're just going based on shape rather than size.
I think it's shape. Yeah, I think that's the...
Yeah. After this, Mr. Burns swears revenge. But we cut to the Pin Pals beating the Home Wreckers, which is, I swear, it's Princess Cashmere, Jacques, and I can't remember the other woman.
No, it's Mindy. It is...
Mindy.
Princess Cashmere, and it is Lurleen.
Lurleen, of course. So all characters we've seen before. Good callback, alas, for those who remember them.
Okay, this is the thing that... If you don't think about it, it just passes you right by. It's like a quick laugh. Mm-hmm. Like, ha, 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 yep, they are all people who tried to get the fam... But when the stereotype team shows up later as well.
Well, this is a subset. They're actually part of the stereotype organization. And the homewreckers branched off because, well, we've got four stereotypes of homewreckers.
I don't know. When you start thinking about how, like, all the other teams make a certain kind of sense, right? Like, people who work at the same job are obviously likely to congregate together, be friends, or join a team, a bowling team, a sports. Indeed. But when you start to think, why is there a team called the Homewreckers? None of those people know each other. None of those people ever met each other. Is there some organization?
Maybe there's a club they go to. It's like, oh, how do we break up marriages?
Maybe. And then the stereotypes. Why would, like, they'd have to be incredibly so. It reminds me of like how in early X-Men comics, it was Magneto led the group. They were called the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Why would they call themselves...
That's what I call my group, the Brotherhood of Evil Engineers.
Why would they call themselves evil? Like, they'd have to be incredibly self-aware and kind of ironic in the naming of their groups.
Obviously, they were mutant hipsters, Robbie. Come on.
I mean, that's their explanation for using it.
I'm pretty sure at least Jacques knew what he was doing.
I think all of them knew what they were doing.
Well, Princess Cashmere didn't even really start out to be a home wrecker.
No, she was just doing her job. But all the other three, I think, knew what they were doing.
Yeah, that's true. I just really enjoyed the fact that they're pushing Jacques around, because obviously Jacques gets his groove on at the bowling alley. So
yeah, they lost.
He's supposed to be good at bowling.
Yeah, it is a good little gag when they lose. And then I think it's Lurleen push gives him a little shove as they're walking away.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
But then after their victory, Mr. Burns shows up and he shows up basically and says that, oh, they're... enjoying their theft, and Smithers has a much uglier word for it, misappropriation, which is one of my favorite words. It's so powerful.
We also find out Moe's opinion about Mr. Burns.
Well, that's true.
And old people in general.
Which I were a few. But Mr. Burns essentially goes over to the team, and they assume they're in big trouble. Smithers assumes Mr. Burns is going to raise them the riot act. But Mr. Burns has one of his trademark changes of heart and wants to join the team. Basically, he saw them beat somebody and was really excited to be part of that. He wants to be a winner, essentially. The pin pals do a little huddle to discuss this. We get a little philosophy from Mo that old people are no good at everything, which is not true. Old people are good at lots of things. They're just mostly not useful.
It was great. I don't think that's necessarily arguing against his point, Matt. When you say they're good at things but not useful, that's not...
Okay, sorry. Most of the things, 90% of the things old people are good at are entirely not useful.
I'm okay.
What, Robbie?
Calling it not useful is not, there's a much more polite way of phrasing it other than calling them not useful. You could say that.
No, I didn't say old people are not useful. I said the things they're good at are not useful.
Again,
completely different
phrasing. You could say that the things they're good at are not valuable in our culture. In our capitalist society, they aren't good. You can't earn money with the things that old people are generally good at most of the time. Therefore, they are undervalued.
Undervalued. Okay. That's a nice way of basically saying what I said.
Yeah, I know. The nice, like, exactly. Nice. It's important sometimes to just try and be nice to our elders, the people who raised us.
That's true, because some of the times they give people money. For those of you who know, I am absolutely joking. Old people are good at lots of important things, such as history, and a few of them are still good at math, even though some of them have no base six for some reason.
They're also very good at
taking care of kids.
Matt, stop it, please. You need to... You're not. It's not getting better.
I'm trying to help.
Just keep, what happens with Mr. Burns and the pin pals?
Oh, so they welcome him to the team and kick Otto off. But it turns out he's very, very bad at bowling. He is awful. Mr. Burns is obviously a captain of industry, but not so great at the whole bowling thing. But anyway, because otherwise they would be kicked out of their league, they welcome him to the team. And that's how we end the act.
When we come back, we see the kids in their uniforms. Basically, their spirits are destroyed.
High spirits are at an all-time low.
They've even begun blinking in unison.
I love that sound.
Now, children, while you're having quiet time, I'm going to make sure my desk is exactly parallel to the rear wall.
Oh, there's something I used to do in this situation, but can't remember.
Ha ho!
Ha ho!
There
needs to be a notification sound on my phone.
There's a visual element to that in which that Bart, Miss Krabappel is bent over her desk with her butt like basically pointing directly at Bart, and Bart just cannot remember how to respond in this situation. He's looking at a slingshot. He just doesn't know what to do, and the kids are kind of destroyed. It does also that. Bit with them blinking and all making a noise is upsetting.
It hurts me on a fundamental level.
I don't know what it is. I guess it's just a noise. Your eyes making a noise. Ugh, that's just weird. It's weird. We get back to the pin pals and they're basically just losing all the time now because they have 3/4 of a team. Basically, Burns is basically the most negative value you could put on any one player. He is that. We don't see him knock down any pins until the very end of the episode. So I'm not sure if that might be the first time he knocks down pins. It's hard to say, but if you have three even great players mixed with someone who's the worst, you're probably going to lose. So we don't see them win, actually, I think, with Burns at all in this whole segment. And this is where they lose to the stereotypes. Otto is back just playing his claw game again. Homer can't kick him off at this point. Both Apu and Mo want Burns off the team, but Homer can't bring himself to do it because it's his boss and he's afraid of him.
Yes, terror is essentially what you need.
Yeah, we see the kids again, and they're outside playing in their new uniforms. I guess playing in the most generous way possible, because they're really just going through the motions. The uniform has sapped them of all their imagination, so there's no playing, really. They're playing tag, but it's a very sad game of tag. We just happen to see this moment when Superintendent Chalmers is back, giving another inspection of the school.
Red, green, yellow, orange, I remember all these.
I'm freaking out!
Hey, something's coming back to me. Down with homework!
And down with uniforms! Yeah!
Why aren't these uniforms color fast?
I don't understand it. I got them at the same place I buy Mother's dresses and be... Good Lord! Mother's in the park!
Now this I gotta see.
It is...
I love how all is forgiven because Chalmers wants to see Agnes in a rainbow dress.
It is raining and all the kids' clothes are running rainbow colors. Again, I think I've actually asked this before, but why is it would it be upsetting that Agnes' clothes turn colors? Like, is just she just so
her because colors are for hippies, Robbie.
Is her psyche so fragile that seeing like bright colors on her clothes would upset her that greatly?
I assume. I mean, you saw what it did to the kids.
I guess that's true. It turns them into like maniacs. So I guess it would have the opposite effect on her. Maybe. Maybe it would make her a little bit happier.
Hopefully, because she's a very unhappy woman.
She's generally not happy. Which is basically a jump to the championship game, I think. We never get any kind of real structure about how, like, the bowling league is set up. They just have, like, a vague ranking on the wall, and they just kind of move these teams around. But we don't ever see, like, oh, it's a round-robin tournament or double elimination. It's just like, hey, they kind of play each other and nothing matters. Like, I don't know. It's weird. Because they do lose with Burns, and yet they're still in the championship game.
Maybe they had just won so much by that point. It was like, it's kind of a done deal.
It's like, it's an accrued point system where the two teams with the most points at the end of the season play each other for the championship.
Maybe?
I think that's the only thing. It's like NASCAR. I think that's the only thing that makes sense to me. But Burns is... Oh, I forgot to mention. There is one other scene before we get to the championship game in which Homer is sad because he's going to lose the championship game. And he is lamenting to Marge about how his trophy case that he made will not be used.
Sorry. I'm just thinking of that one sad trophy he stole.
Yeah, it's an Academy Award for... I don't know how to pronounce his name correctly. Hang S. Neuer. He won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor in For the Killing Fields. And
I don't know why Homer would have that unless it was in the trash.
I don't either. And also that the guy was actually killed shortly after this aired. So Yeesh. they changed it in the syndicated edition. So that it would read Don Amici instead, because they were afraid that it would read that Homer had murdered that poor man to get his statue.
We know Homer wouldn't do that. He'd just come across the open door to his house, the body on the floor, and just take a few things he liked.
I guess so. Either way, it's pretty dark. So I don't know. But rest in peace, actor Mr. Nyora. I don't know how to pronounce your name, but I'm very... It's a lot of darkness, a lot of sadness coming up in this. I'm not sure I like any of this. Not good. Cue the championship game. Burns, and the Tanya. Is it supposed to be like a Tanya Hardy joke? Is that what that is?
I mean, I assume a masked man runs out of the bathroom and whangs somebody in the knee.
I guess you're right.
Pretty sure.
Yeah, I guess Burns is ailing from an injured knee, but Mo takes upon himself to take out Mr. Burns, but ends up just fixing his knee by whacking him in the back of the knee, and does nothing except making him able to bowl. Homer is about to bite the bullet and actually fire Mr. Burns and kick him off the team when Burns shows benevolence that we very rarely see.
Yeah. Oh, I almost forgot. I brought you all a little something.
Oh, would you look at that? The pin pass.
At last, I finally have a garment fine enough to be married in.
I've always been wealthy, but this is the first time I ever felt rich.
Aww.
Now, Homer, you were about to say something to me.
You're off the team.
What?
He's just ribbing you, Monty.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's funny because we eventually see Apu married, and I don't think he's wearing this shirt.
I was gonna say, I wish it was like they did it, like a super, super tricky callback and had him actually try maybe
wearing that.
Just try wearing the pin pal shirt. You know, he doesn't have to actually use it, but just show him like maybe even thinking about it. So we see Burns be a nice guy, and so the team just doesn't have the heart to kick him off. Starts to sell that again. This episode really has no real message. It starts to have one, and then it kind of gets derailed. I like you also mentioned that Burns seems to remember Homer's name throughout this episode.
Yeah, he never forgets it, which is weird.
This episode is a weird one, and Burns is out of character for most of it. They don't really even make an excuse for it. But
he was just on ether the whole time.
I guess it must be it. He was just super into ether during this time period. They are facing the Holy Rollers, who are doing extraordinarily well, and Burns is still doing terrible. We cut to basically the last frame, and there is one person left to bowl for the pin pals, and they are down by exactly one pin, and that is Mr. Burns. Burns bowls, rolls a gutter ball, his first ball. Second ball, creeps down the lane, edge right on the edge of the gutter, and then and nudges two pins. It's kind of brushes against them. It doesn't knock them down. They're a little wobbly. Otto is using the claw game at the same time, pulls a screw out of the bottom of it, making it collapse. It collapses, shaking the foundation of the bowling alley. Sure it does. That's fine. And the two pins fall down, giving the pin pals the win. Much rejoicing.
Yay.
I mean, they are very happy about their win. But Burns has one of his, how's he phrase it earlier in the episode?
No. Trademark changes of heart.
Changes of heart. Okay, there you go. You got it. Okay. Yes, Burns has another one of his trademark changes of heart.
Woohoo! We won! We won!
You mean I won?
But we were a team, sir.
Oh, I'm afraid I've had one of my trademark changes of heart. You see, teamwork will only take you so far. Then the truly evolved person makes that extra grab for personal glory. Now, I must discard my teammates, much like the boxer must shed roll after roll of sweaty, useless, disgusting flab before he can win the title. Ta!
I guess some people never change. Or they quickly change and then quickly change back.
You know what? We don't need him or his trophy. We got each other. Huh?
Yes, oh, you are. Yeah, that's right, Mo. Oh.
Go home, Homer, you're our man. You can't do it. No one can.
That's them cheering on Homer as he tries to steal the trophy back from Mr. Burns.
I really wish you'd grab the last little bit of that. Oh, I guess no one can. Run!
I know, but it's like, it turns into like 30 seconds of dog noises. I don't really think it's adding much to the episode. But yeah, the episode ends with Homer getting mauled by Burns' attack dogs.
It happens, you know.
It does happen. It's a weird episode. It's very funny, but I don't know. There seemed like a time in this episode where it could have gone into trying to say something about friendship or about team or about dudes like in a sport like that. The fact that they're so positive about and helpful and they are kind of rejecting a lot of typical, you know, male sport behavior and stereotype. They could have said stuff about that, but I don't know. It feels it feels very much like the third act of this just kind of spins off into whatever. Like, they didn't really know how to end it, and so they just kind of ended it.
I don't know. I kind of feel like this ending is completely logical and just makes sense for this.
Matt, Burns' behavior.
Okay, his behavior in the beginning where he's like, oh, I want to be part of this. Okay, I think one thing he says is seeing you revel in the misery of a vanquished foe or something along those lines, that is trademark Mr. Burns. He is like, oh, yes, I want to be that. I want to, you know, take pain or take joy from other people's misery. Mr. Burns is Schadenfreude writ large. Okay, that's what he is. So I can believe that. Him being nice throughout the whole thing is a little weird, probably an ether trip, but at the end Mr. Burns is like, yeah, I'm taking the trophy for myself and bailing out.
It's not the fact that he takes the trophy, like, or that he is, it's, or that he wants to be a winner, like that, those things I buy. It's all the nice behavior in the middle. It doesn't, it's a weird thing. Like, I kept thinking about Old Man and Lisa, where they so successfully make Burns both sympathetic and villainous.
Which I think this episode is very similar to that one. It's just more of a build-up.
I don't know. I never for once go, oh, I care about Mr. Burns. I don't know. It's very funny. It's a very funny episode. It has a lot of good gags in it. A lot of good sight gags. Very good writing, but I don't know. The actual kind of, it felt, the ending just like, it felt like it sputtered.
If you say so, I don't see it at all.
I don't know. It just didn't do much for me.
I feel like that ending makes absolute sense. Like, the whole story holds together or hangs together so perfectly for me. I don't understand what you're talking about, to be honest with you.
Why is Burns being nice in the middle? Answer that question.
Because he knows he's going to betray them at the end, and he just wants the trophy. He wants to prove that he's better than other people. He wants to revel in their misery.
But Burns is not a liar, Matt. He's not a liar.
Are we talking about the same Mr. Burns?
He doesn't lie. He is quite honest in his villainy in general.
Sometimes.
What do you mean?
Most of the time.
Give me an example.
Right.
Give me an example.
All right, let me think. When has Mr. Burns lied?
Like, straight up, just like acted completely different to fool people.
Nothing's coming to mind, but I know there's been something.
Well, I'm sure there are situations that this show's 28 years old.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, there have been times he's done.
I know,
that.
But up until this point, I don't like it. Just is just it feels out of left. Out of left field.
I don't know. Maybe if he was lying the entire time, it would be out of left field. But there's got to be something. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm thinking of later episodes. But I feel he lied.
I don't know. Okay. Maybe I'm not going to say that there's no Burns episodes where he doesn't lie straight up. Or my Mr. Burns. The one I think of when you say, hey, think of Mr. Burns, what I think of is he is like cartoonishly villainous, right? Mustache twirl.
Right.
I think of, See My Vest. I think of him singing a song about him murdering hundreds of animals and taking their skin. Like, it's not subtle. And it's not like acting nice to people and then pulling the rug out from under them.
Burns' heir. He gets a whole family to lie to Bart about his family not missing him in order to keep Bart
in his
thrall.
I know, but that's not him himself.
But he's still lying to Bart. He's like, this is your family and they don't want you.
That's different, though. It's like, that's also cartoonishly, like, that's dumb. It's so complicated. Like, that's the thing. It's like, it's complicated and complex. I think that's also part of this, Mr. Burns. It's just like, it's like simple. It's just like a simple, like, hey, yeah, I bought you shirts. I don't know.
I feel like it's entirely within Mr. Burns's sometimes petty nature.
I think he would. I don't know. It just left me a little flat.
Fair enough. But like I said, you're saying that the characterization of Mr. Burns in this episode is a little different from what you expect Mr. Burns to be.
Yeah.
I'm saying the logical progression of the episode makes sense.
It's not that it doesn't make sense. It's just, but it's not exciting to me.
Okay.
Like, it's not like it's completely ridiculous. It's like, I think that's maybe actually the problem. It's a little too simple.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I can see that, I guess.
It's just, Mr. Burns is just like, hey, no, I lied. I'm going to take the trophy. Bye. I don't know. I want it bigger. Like, we've seen Who Shot Mr. Burns, where he literally builds a machine. Like, I think that's just the Mr. Burns I like. You know, he builds a machine that blocks the sun. He builds a machine. He builds a recycling plant that kills thousands of sea animals.
I think this is them expanding his villainy.
It's making him too small. He's a Doctor Doom.
He is, but occasionally Doctor Doom does something. I mean, he hired Luke Cage and then didn't pay him, so Luke Cage had to run out to Latveria stealing the Fantastic Four's Fantastic Car to get there to get Doom to pay up.
I was going
to
make that the same example. Yeah, Luke Cage gets he needs his $200. It's all about the principle of the thing. We can move on. We'll rank it at the end of the show. I don't know what we're going to do with this episode. It's a weird one. No submissions for my favorite episode. If you have a favorite episode, please send it in at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com explaining why a certain episode is your favorite. And we'll read it. I'll read it when we get to it.
When I get to it.
We can move on to our next segment. There it is. It is time for comments from the newsgroup.
Okay, here we are. Alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the newsgroup is where I will comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons newsgroup and see what people are talking about the week or two after an episode debuted. Guess what, Matt?
What?
The newsgroup is back in 1996. Those records are again after the new year. I don't know what happened. What in these weird months, several months long period where there's just the archives are vanished, but everything is there again. Hundreds of articles asking for WAVE files and where Springfield is. Reviews are mostly average to above average. You know, nothing, not a lot of like, hey, it's the worst, but not a lot of, hey, it's the best either.
So, hey, they kind of agree with us for
once.
Yeah,
exactly. I think, I don't know, for all the ones I read, they seemed to actually mostly agree with them. Several in memoriams to Doris Grau, who recently passed, so at that time. So, very nice, touching things. People not being mean and petty for once on the internet.
What?
I know, it's crazy. There's a lot of niceness on the internet. You just gotta look the right places. Basically, not the comment section of anything.
Yes, always ignore comments.
Well,
I know.
Our comments are actually generally pretty nice. Generally.
Well, that's because we have the best people listening to us ever. I mean, come on.
Well, I don't like bacon generalizations, but you are 100% correct.
100%?
You heard me.
Okay, fair enough.
You heard me. That's nothing else too interesting. Listener, I'm getting ahead of myself. We can move on to our next segment. It is time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
Listener question of the week this week is, what is your favorite fake video game from the show? Got a lot of good answers. Appreciate all the responses. First up, we from Jessica, @JessicaRees1. Earthland Realms from Marge Gamer featured a lot of citizens of Springfield, and the episode was built around it. Caroline at Karolinski? One of the two. Dingo Dash. Nunchucks? Those aren't even Australian. It was a good, like, kind of Crash Bandicoot parody. Brandon at Funny Film Fan. Super Slugfest. Love how good a parody it is of Punch Out. And Mitch at MitchDouble13. Polybus is fake, right? Or is it? Shifty eyes. Either way, it's a great nod to anyone who's deep into 80s arcade culture. Next up, we have Holly. Have to go with the Waterworld game. I love that it costs 40 quarters. Milhouse takes one step and it's game over. Says, what a rip. Hesitates for half a second. Deposits 40 more. Oh, Milhouse, you sweet summer child. Daniel's answer, Grand Theft Walrus. I have no explanation beyond those three beautiful words. They're good words. Brian's answer, let's make a baby from this little wiggy. Who wouldn't want to play a video game about making babies while strapped into the Millennium Falcon turret from Star Wars?
Wow. Just wow.
I mean, it's a good argument. Making babies with Millennium Falcon turret. Holly, Triangle Wars. Just imagine the complexities of the plot. It's not impossible to make a game with very simple shapes. There's a game called Thomas Was Alone that is all about shapes, and it actually has a good story to it. You kind of have to, most of it's implied, but it's still there. We have Tom's answer. There is no wrong answer here. My favorite has always been Super Slugfest from the Moaning Lisa episode. I give this game top honors, not only because I love the Punch-Out series, but because of the way Homer screams, "Oh no!" when Marge unplugs the game. My favorite memory of that scream was when my buddy was playing a real-time strategy game online after building his base for over 3 hours. 3 hours? I accidentally shut off his game when I turned the light switch off, not knowing he plugged his system into the outlet controlled by the switch. At which point my friend did not miss a beat and screamed, "Oh no!" just like Homer. Friends who can quote Simpsons on the fly are always the best. Love you guys. Keep up the great work. From Chris, my dinner with Andre. It took me 20 years to get the joke. Bon ma. Rob's answer. In Homer the Mo, Homer plays Devil's Advocate, which turns out to be a pinball game featuring a picture of Devil in a stylish purple suit holding a briefcase. From Elliot. I'm sorry to be so obvious, but I have to go with Lee Carvello's putting challenge. I am Carvello. And the enunciation on Power Drive are just too much. It's shocking to me that so many people remember Chrono Trigger as being the best video game from 1995. The correct answer was right in front of us all along. Long live Carvalho. May he reign for 1,000 years.
He can reign across the greens if he can get his special jacket.
Chrono Trigger is pretty good. And finally from John, from Homer Badman, Disemboweler 4, the game where condemned criminals dig each other with rusty hooks. I would endeavor to do a little housework so I could play it for 5 minutes. What is your answer, Matt?
Wow. I'm going to have to go with Earthland Realms. You know, I'm a WoW player. Have been since well into vanilla. So seeing an MMO in The Simpsons is pretty special. And I think they nail it. You know, it's important to be able to kill your family members inside the game.
No comment about WoW.
I know.
My answer is... I thought about it, and it's tricky. I think I'm gonna go with Panamanian Strongman.
Nice. That's
I don't a know. Good one. It stood out to me. There really is no wrong answer. They're all really, really good. I have a particular fondness for all of the fake games that The Simpsons have created over the years because they aren't that much more ridiculous than actual games.
That's true, especially the 90s explosion in games, actually the late 80s explosion in games, and all the indie fare we're getting now game development has been somewhat democratized. There are all kinds of crazy games out there.
Like the game where you play a square and you're Thomas and you're alone.
Yep, I like that one.
Yep. Next week's question is, what is your favorite auto quote?
Oh, man, that's tough.
I will post it on all of our social media, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod. You can email us @SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Follow, like, all those good words about social media. I will post links about The Simpsons when I see them. Like today's link, the time of the recording, Simpsons have been extended for two more seasons to at least season 30.
Goodness gracious.
And who knows if they'll go beyond that. We'll see. But we can move on to our next segment. It is time for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where Matt and I will each challenge each other with 3 trivia questions. 1 easy, 1 medium, 1 hard. Try and stump the other. We have a wager for this season. The host who loses must eat, or at least attempt to eat, 64 slices of American cheese in a sitting.
Yep.
We can do it. We can. I'm not gonna say I because I think that that makes you think that I'm gonna be the one to do it. But I can still win this.
You absolutely can.
It's not.
I believe in you, Robbie.
I don't want to hear you. You don't get to. It's not you. You're my enemy. I'll start us off, Matt. I chose all my questions from a single episode. That episode is Gump Roast.
Oh God, I'm screwed. Okay.
Gump Roast was the last of what kind of episode?
A clip show.
That is correct. There you go, Matt. You're doing fine. You got 1 point already.
All right, that's okay. I'm pretty sure you've never even seen the episode that I took all my questions from.
Yeah, that's thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. What country is Carl Carlson from?
Iceland.
That is correct. Uh-oh. Maybe you have seen it.
I have seen that episode. It's a good one. Oh. I like it. I think I've seen it one time, but I did like it. That one time I watched it.
All right, I Gump Roast one time.
Okay. Your medium question. The episode ends with a song titled, "They'll Never Stop the Simpsons." What song is it parodying?
I might know this.
This is an easy question for a normal person, but Matt doesn't pay attention to something called music, so it's a medium question for him.
It's true, music is boring.
I hope that they put that quote on your tombstone, Matt. That'd be...
Feel free.
Music is boring. Old people are useless. Music is boring.
Old people are not useless. That was a joke, but music is boring.
See, when you say things like that, Matt, it makes people think that you don't know what a joke is.
I do know what a joke is. Okay, good. Yeah, I got nothing. I have no idea what that song is called.
It's We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel.
Oh, God, of course. That makes more sense. I'm just an idiot.
Give me my medium question.
All right, fine. Actually, I didn't put the name of the episode. I believe it's The Saga of Carl. What does Carl buy with the stolen lottery money?
Doesn't he buy a ticket back to Iceland?
He does not, actually. That's not what he actually spends the money on.
Okay.
But I'll give you another shot if you want.
Because I know he goes back to Iceland. Is it the book that exonerates his family, right? It has the history of Iceland in it or something, and it shows that his family was he was adopted by an Icelandic family, and they had been blamed for everything, and he was looking for this book that would tell their real story, you know, tell them, like, make it seem that they weren't villains, like, way back.
You're so close. I think I have to give it to you. It's actually just a single page it's a single page that basically exonerates his family, or purportedly might exonerate his family.
I'm taking those points. If you give them to me, I'm taking them. Your hard question, Matt.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember this, but in Gump Roast, King and Kodos make an appearance. Because of course they
right.
do. Yeah. They agree to spare Earth if Earth meets their demand. What is their demand?
Their demand. Oh, to never cancel The Simpsons?
That is incorrect.
Oh, dang.
It is to be a part of the People's Choice Awards.
Oh.
Which they acquiesced to. They let Kang and Kodos be a part of the People's Choice Awards.
Is the People's Choice Awards still a thing?
No clue.
Okay.
Maybe?
Just checking.
We can find out.
Really care that much. It's a People's Choice Award.
Now you got me wondering. It's a website that's still going. Yeah, there's the next ceremony is January 18th, 2017. So yeah, it's still happening.
Fair enough. All right, are you ready for your hard question?
Sure.
Mr. Screw Me Over.
Oh, whatever. I don't want to hear it.
Your hard question.
Mm-hmm.
What the guys, Mo, Lenny, Carl, and Homer do since the money has been spent? What do they do when they get back to Springfield?
I don't remember.
How
did they get that money?
They won the lottery.
Oh, right. Okay. They go drinking? I don't know.
No, not really.
Okay, what's the answer?
Homer was going to put in a pool with his share of the money. Instead, they make little keg pools that they all relax and enjoy in, except Homer gets stuck in his.
Okay, I thought that was particularly interesting. I don't remember. I think that episode's a good episode for, you know, a Latter-day Simpson episode. I think it's pretty good. I would add it to the small list of episodes where they travel to a different country, and it's not bad.
That's true. That is a very small list.
It is.
To be fair, it's not the Simpson family in that one. It's just Homer, so it's not as bad.
I've got some bonus questions for you, Matt.
Okay, I can do that. Hopefully, after you've embarrassed me.
I embarrassed you. You're still beating me, by the way. By six
by
points.
What? 2 points?
Six points.
6 points, okay.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to repeat this performance 3 times just to tie you. So I don't want to hear it. These questions are from John. These are all from Bart the Fink, which I believe we had mentioned in a previous episode.
Which is a fantastic episode.
It's a great episode. Which Simpson relation were the family at a will reading for at the beginning of the episode?
Oh.
Where they get the money, the $100.
Was it Aunt Gladys?
Great Aunt Hortense.
Hortense, of course. Hortense the Mule Face Girl.
Name the four people who Bart writes a check for.
Writes a check for or writes a check to?
Two. Yeah, whatever.
Okay. He definitely writes one to Krusty, of course. That's the, what's the story. Mm-hmm. He writes one to Jimbo. Mm-hmm. He writes one to Milhouse. And that's three. What's the four? Oh, Lisa. For what was like 1 cent and no cents.
Well, the ones I've got here are Lisa, Apu, Corky, Jimbo Jones, and Krusty.
Oh, okay.
No Milhouse.
Milhouse is definitely one because he writes it for $1 million, but it's a post-dated check. You can't cash it until the year like 10 million or something like that. Maybe it may have been like 2017. Either way, he definitely writes a check to Milhouse.
I don't remember. By how much and how long do the IRS garnish Krusty's salary?
90% for 20 years.
95% for 40 years.
40 years.
I think at first it was 75% for 20 years or something, and then they had to...
I thought it was 75% for 40 years, and Krusty says, oh, I don't plan to live that long, so it's like 95% for 20 years or 30 years or something like that.
I don't know.
Either way, I got it wrong. Doesn't matter.
To become more cost-effective, which frills does Krusty the Clown Show have to cut down on?
Sets, props, and Sideshow Mel.
Sets, props, costumes, and Sideshow Mel.
Oh, of course.
Which items are sold at the auction in Krusty's mansion?
His suitcase, his suitcase and his plane are the only ones I remember.
A handmade leather suitcase bought for 40 cents by Selma. 32 cartons of pornography.
To soak her feet in.
What was that?
To soak her feet in.
Oh, right. To soak her feet in. 32 cartons of pornography bought for 12 cents by a telephone bidder in Japan. His bed was bought for $0.50 by Mo, and his private plane, which was unknown.
I'm on a roll of gay.
Well, that is the answer to the next question. What is the name of Krusty's private plane? You got it right. Who did Marge want to be alive so badly she saw him everywhere? Come on, Matt. Snappy Snappy.
Sorry, Lee Majors?
Lyndon Johnson.
Oh, no, Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson.
Lee Majors was a different fantasy.
Yeah.
Just as he about to leave the dock, what does Krusty say as his true calling in life?
Salvaging sunken barges for scrap metal?
Scrap iron, but I'll give it to you. That is correct.
Okay, thanks.
That's all for today. Thank you, John, for those questions. Whew. If you guys want to send in a question or theme, I'll do my best to use them. We can move on to our final segment we end every single episode with. It is time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is the part of the show where Matt and I will rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. Matt?
Where
does it go?
I would probably put it higher than you would because I'm a big fan of the funny episodes, but you're right. This episode is kind of weird.
I hate laughing. Laughing's the worst.
Well, I mean, I feel like I enjoy the ones where it's just laughs. There's no heart. There's no message. There's no biting social commentary. It's just jokes. I think I enjoy those a little more than you do, but still we're in season 7 now. There's a lot of great episodes. I don't know. Is it better than Bart Gets an Elephant? Because I feel like that one is mostly jokes.
I think Bart Gets an Elephant is way better than this one.
I think so, too. I don't know.
Okay, not too long ago we watched Sideshow Bob's Last Gleaming. Is it better than that? I would say they're actually not that far apart from each other.
No, they're not. Because I was looking at all the ones below that, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, Saturdays of Thunder, Brush with Greatness. Brush with Greatness is really good. I enjoyed that one, but it's worked its way down the list.
I enjoy most of these. I just don't. There's very few Simpsons episodes that I downright do not enjoy. Just some I enjoy more.
That's true. Okay, so I definitely think this is not as good as Sideshow Bob's Last Gleaming.
Okay.
I do think it is better than The Boy Who Knew Too Much, but Brother from the Same Planet, that episode's always a weird one for me.
I would put this below that one.
Okay, fair enough. When it comes to that episode, I can't compare. It's just a weird episode.
Pepsi.
Partial credit.
Pepsi. Mm-hmm. All right, so that will put Team Homer at number 69 on our list. Nice. Right above The Boy Who Knew Too Much and right below Brother from the Same Planet. Number one on our list is still Cape Fear. And last is Homer's Odyssey, number 130. It will be supplanted at some point in a few years, a few seasons, I should say.
That's still probably, it's still probably enough seasons that it'll be a few years.
Yeah. Matt, what is our next episode?
Oh, you caught me off guard. I believe it is. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my gosh. It's Two Bad Neighbors.
It is Two Bad Neighbors.
Is this our first presidential
appearance
episode?
I mean, I believe Bill Clinton has appeared in an episode before this. Not, you know, there.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, they got Bill Clinton to, he walks by. Do your job. Make me.
Get back to work.
Yeah. No, I enjoy Two Bad Neighbors quite a bit, so I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Yes, I cannot wait.
You can find this list at our website. It is simply thesimpsonsshow.com. Links to everything there, new episodes. You can download them. You can stream them there. Links to our Facebook, to our Twitter, to our RSS feed, links to our Patreon. If you think the show is worth a dollar or two, throw it our way. We really would appreciate it. And this list, broken down by season, by trails of our segments, and in total, I think that will do it for us today. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter, at MixMasterCereal. That's MixMasterCereal. And please check out my other podcasts. Handsome Boys Comics Hour, it is a comic book podcast. And The Serial Fanaticist, which Matt will be joining me in at some point. Matt does not participate in social media. Unless a certain level of Patreon backer, you will not find him.
That is true. However, my brain stopped working. So therefore, I cannot communicate. So I've decided to take up meditation so I can project my astral form and help Doctor Strange fight the evil. So I'll see you guys on the astral plane.
With that, we'll call it a day. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching the Simpsons!